Hello and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, and my partner Rita Dunaway, who's usually here with us, has had a family emergency and can't be with us today, and we miss her. But we do have a very special guest who I will introduce in just a minute. Today we're going to be talking about law enforcement. You know, when I grew up, I remember being taught the importance of being respectful to those in positions of authority, but especially to military personnel and to police officers who put their own lives on the line every day in order to keep us safe. Now, I don't know whether that is still being taught or not, but we all know that these past few years have featured national press coverage of various standoffs between citizens and law enforcement. For instance, people have come under heavy criticism for using excessive force in certain situations. And whether it is the cause or an effect of these situations, there seems to be a growing cultural trend of disrespect toward law enforcement. And this is where we come in today. As Christians, we know that it is our job to be salt and light in our culture. So the question that we'll be addressing today is, how do we do that in our current environment? And that's why I am so pleased to invite an expert to help us answer that question, to offer us the law enforcement perspective. And that is our own Rockingham County Sheriff, Brian Hutchison. Sheriff Hutchison, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Dean. Great to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to a lot of good answers to some tough questions
here.
We'll
give it a shot anyway, right?
So we're really grateful for your taking the time to be with us. But before we go further, I think it's important that we establish the importance of law. And that means that we need to go back to some basics and point out that Scripture teaches us that providing protection on the basis of law, protection for its people, is one of the most fundamental functions of our government. And I'll just cite a couple of scriptures. I know you're familiar with it, but some of our listeners may not be. Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2, both New Testament scriptures, make clear that government is ordained of God to praise those who do good, but also to punish those who do evil. Government does not bear the sword in vain. But in the Old Testament as well, and maybe even more so in the Old Testament, we have examples of how important the law is and the importance to protect on the basis of that law. And I think particularly of Nehemiah, when he was rebuilding the broken down walls of Jerusalem. He made sure that his men kept a sword at their side in order to defend their families from attack. So here we have the scriptural basis of government. Do you have any other examples that we should call attention to?
Well, no, I think that starts it off going back a few years.
That goes back a few years.
Yeah,
that,
no doubt.
And in fact, William Blackstone, an English jurist who really set the groundwork for American law, made the point that unless our law reflects biblical truth, it is not worthy of being our law. So that's important, I think, that we understand this. But in addition to that, and certainly more recently, this importance of the law and protection is recognized in America's founding documents. For example, in the Declaration of Independence, we read that the very reason that we have governments is to secure the people's rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The key word is to secure these rights. That's what we look to you for, to secure these rights. But in addition, the preamble to the Constitution also makes clear that the purpose of this Constitution was to establish justice, to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Now, before I ask you the next question, do you have anything else to add to this,
Pat? I think that's very well said.
So we have the foundation for the law and for the importance of enforcing the law. So, Sheriff, let's start off on a more personal basis. At what point did this important job of protecting people and their rights begin to appeal to you? And tell us a little bit about your background and why you went into law enforcement.
Definitely. That's something that I always wanted to do. Going back from as long as I can remember being a young child, it was always the answer to the question of what do you want to do when you grow up? My answer to that was always a resounding, I want to be a police officer. I'm not exactly sure why, what that was for. I think maybe some different impressions were made upon me. Nobody in my immediate family was in law enforcement, but I had some familiarity through some neighbors and some friends who had relatives that were in it. So I guess that impressed it upon me. And of course, at the young age, when you have the cars and all the little toys that go with it, that helped too. So I had all of those toys. And then it just always fostered that desire within me to make a career out of it, always what I wanted to do. So I went to Virginia Tech. And when I graduated from there, I started in law enforcement with the Virginia State Police. And it's never been a doubt in my mind, again, from being little till today, that's what I wanted to do. And that's what I want to do. It's, I don't know if you want to call it a calling or not. Yeah. It's definitely something that I have a passion for and always have.
Now, you mentioned being a state police officer, but then you went to another position, did you not? In Woodstock, I believe.
Right. I was the chief of police up there for a couple years.
And then you came to Harrisonburg.
As sheriff.
What is your territory and what are your primary responsibilities?
So here, serving as sheriff of Harrisonburg and Rockingham, it covers that whole geographical area within the confines of Rockingham County. So you're talking about 800-900 square miles. Very right. Large area. If you want to test that out, I mean, just think from Criders down to Grottoes, you know, that's a lot of real estate. Even if you try to drive, that'll take you some time. So that whole area is what I guess our responsibilities are here locally.
And how many people live in that area? I checked your website and I didn't write it down. Do you know that offhand?
Oh, for the county, the population, I want to say, is somewhere around maybe 80,000. And the city, I think, is around 45. Now, that's off the top
sure.
of my head, but
sure.
ballpark figures as to the population. So there's a great geographic area that we serve, as well as a large population.
Now, you mentioned the city of Harrisonburg, but you have other municipalities in the Rockingham County area.
Sure. There's seven towns within the county of Rockingham, and I guess six of them have police departments. So we work closely with those town police departments, as well as the JMU Police Department, Massanutten Police Department, Bridgewater Air Park. So we have a lot of localities throughout
sure.
the county that we work with and covering a large area in doing so.
Many of us have moved to the Valley from other places. And that includes me, born in Indiana, living in a number of places overseas, living in the larger metropolitan area of Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, New York City for a term. And Jamaica, which all of these
wow.
places, and Papua New Guinea, all of these places
wow.
have their own crime problems.
I can imagine.
I first came here in the early 60s to attend school here and came back. When we were looking for a place to really settle down after retiring, we were drawn back to this area. And it wouldn't surprise you. I don't know, were you raised in the Valley?
In Virginia. I was raised in Prince William County.
Okay.
Just north of here a little bit, and then with the Virginia State Police, traveled all around the state working and living in a number of different places.
What brought you to the Valley?
Ultimately, I was assigned here with the State Police.
Okay.
What brought me here first, and then just kind of really fell in love with it very quickly.
To that point, those of us who lived other places and came here are struck by how special the Valley is in so many ways. And I'm sure you sometimes meet and talk with law enforcement officers from other areas. So in your mind, what sets this area apart from others? I know it has its strengths. I know it has its challenges. But what makes the Valley different from other areas where you might have worked?
I think the main thing there is just the sense of community that we have here in the Valley. And having worked in some of the bigger cities in Virginia, Lynchburg, Richmond, Norfolk, Fredericksburg, Fairfax County, of course, where you just don't have that. There's not that sense of community, whether it's outgrown it or times have just changed, I'm not sure. But here in our locality, we're very fortunate. I do think it's the greatest strength that you have. People just care for one another. You right. see that in the community events that we have. Anytime someone has an illness or someone has a tragic event that affects their family, well, there's a spaghetti dinner
right.
to help them out, or a pancake
right.
breakfast,
yeah.
you know, barbecue chicken, you name it. People
yeah.
really go and take the initiative
yes.
to help those folks and families that are in need.
Yes.
And it's really, truly an amazing thing to see.
It is indeed, and I never take that for granted. And I think underlying that is a unity of faith. You've got a church on every other street corner, and people are just drawn to that and instructed by that. I know that it's not heaven on earth,
Sure.
Right. No place is.
No, indeed.
But what would you say then are the types of crimes that are the biggest problem for our area? And of course, there's a whole list that I could draw on. And in fact, I'll just list some and you can sort of pick and choose from that and maybe pick up some others that I've overlooked.
Okay.
But the ones that we read about in the news most often involve drugs, human trafficking, domestic abuse, interracial conflicts, maybe less so here than some other areas, homicides, that must be your most difficult cases, robberies, pornography, illegal immigration, and now even threats of domestic terrorism. Well, that gives you a whole lineup. What are some of your major challenges in the area?
Well, I think with crime, it tends to come in cycles. I think that's one of the things that we routinely see. Without rhyme or reason, you see kind of a spike in a particular type of crime, whether it's property crimes, the larcenies and things like that, or if it's drug crimes, that type of activity. It seems like it comes and goes. Fortunately, around here, we don't have a lot of the violent crimes. We've had a few here, I guess, in recent past, but it's really no rhyme or reason to that either. It's just an act of violence that ends in tragedy, but I don't think you can pinpoint it as, well, now this is a crime problem or it's a crime wave or any kind. It just, I think it's a cyclical thing, and it depends on the circumstances involved. Same thing with sexual assaults or domestic assaults and things like that. It seems like sometimes weather gets good, some of those crimes tend to go up, and the weather goes down, and it can be affected by a lot of external factors. And it's really one thing we know is it's hard to predict.
That's what I was going to say. You can't look at tomorrow and see what you might expect to come across your desk.
You can't. It's a very unpredictable thing.
You know, one thing that struck me when we were dealing with the SOBs in town a couple years ago, you may not know what an SOB is. You probably see a lot of SOBs.
Right. I might have been called at a time or two. I don't know.
No, we're talking about sexually oriented businesses in town.
Oh, okay.
Porn shops.
Okay.
And I remember at that time, Marsha Garst said, as Commonwealth's attorney, that 70% of crime scenes have evidence of pornography in the area. Mm-hmm. And so that really takes us to the root of some of these crimes. And I'd be interested in what you see as some of the root. I know you're not a psychologist. You're
right.
Not a pastor.
That's true. That's very true.
But are there some common patterns or themes that you see driving crime in general?
I think it's multiple factors. I really do. I think you can look at society as a whole, and there's a lot to be said of that. I think the culture that has changed over the years, just the culture of our society. I think the economy is a factor in it for sure. The growing population that we have in the area, you know, our tendency is to try to pinpoint something. This is the cause, and this is, I do believe it's multiple factors, cultural, societal, economic. The one thing that we had a lot is, well, what is the reason for the increasing jail population? That question comes up fairly regularly.
Sure.
Because it's still increasing. It has been for some time.
Sure.
The tendency, I guess it's human nature, is to say, well, let's pinpoint it. Let's say the cause is this, but you really can't. It's far more complex than that. It's a variety of factors, I think, that combine. Crime rate goes up. Then, of course, the jail population goes up.
Sure.
And here we go. You look at just the other day, I think it was Monday this week to start off the week, we had 28 people that were arrested and brought into the jail. We had 12 that were getting released. So we were up 16 just on Monday. And it's been a busy week. So does that mean it's a crime wave going on? Not necessarily. It could be a number of things. Just some more papers got served those days. Maybe some people turned themselves in. The court was busier. But it's a random, multidimensional situation.
Let me try to isolate just a couple of them. Drug activity. You've been in office in your position for what, about 5 years?
This is second year of second term. So I started in 2012.
2012.
Yeah.
5 years. So have you seen any increase, for example, in drug activity, gang activity, human trafficking with I-81 going right through town and through our county?
Yeah.
Have you seen increases in any of those three areas, do you think?
I don't think anything dramatic. I think it's been consistent. And a lot of those crimes are all overlapping. The gang activity is related to drug activity, which is related to violent behavior. It's all kind of hand in hand. A lot of the grand larcenies and break-ins that we investigate, the B&Es, well, a lot of those are being done to get money for drugs. So it's kind of a web of crime and not necessarily this, that, and the other.
If you start breaking the law in one area, you're likely to be breaking it in other areas. Law becomes less important to you, and what you want, you're going to get no matter what it takes to get it.
Right.
That is, a criminal in one area is probably more prone to be a criminal in other areas as well. Once you break those taboos.
Right. I would agree with that. Wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah. I'm going to make it pretty simple here. I think there's a root cause.
Okay, there's a root cause. Work your magic.
Well, I wish it were magic, and maybe it's not magic, but it's common sense, I think. And that is, since many of our laws are drawn from the Bible, beginning with the Ten Commandments, it occurs to me that if we lose our respect for Scripture, then we're losing our respect for our civil laws as well. There seems to be maybe a connection there. If we lose our respect for God and our fear of God, then we're likely to lose our fear of the man in uniform.
You could probably connect dots in that way.
I would think so.
I would too. Yeah, sir.
Okay. Let's try to really shift it away from just our law enforcement officers, such as yourself. But I think sometimes we say, well, that's your job. You know, I don't have any responsibility for that. So the question that we have here is, what can we do as members of the community to make our neighborhoods safer, make your job easier? Isn't this something that all of us can help with rather than just leave it to the man in blue or the woman in blue?
Very true. I agree with that as well. I think the public can be mindful, be alert in their daily activities, continue to be observant in what they're doing, identify suspicious activities, suspicious people, suspicious situations, and take detailed notes of that, to where who, what, when, where, the basic facts. If you can call us with that information, sometimes people are hesitant to do that because they feel like it's a bother. But we encourage, strongly encourage the public, if you see something that seems wrong, oftentimes it is, and we would rather check into it and have it not be than for you to not call, and that could have been some information that was helpful to us. So not to hesitate to let us know, be helpful to us in contacting us with information, whether it's a phone call, an email, whatever it might be. The more detailed the information, the more helpful that it always is. And then also, going back to a previous question, a big thing the public can do is continue to keep the community strong, like I believe we have around here, talking about the different events, the spaghetti dinners and all those things that are done, the lawn parties that we have. I think it's getting ready to be that time of year, and I love it. Right. I think that's a great sense of community, people looking after one another. You go to the different ones all across the county from Grottoes to Bergton, that they have those lawn parties. They're great things, and a lot of them are like family reunions. People go, have a little food, chat with one another, and keeping the community strong in ways like that, I think, is a great thing.
Yeah, you mentioned calling. If you see something unusual, or if you see something that concerns you, do you have a number that people can call?
Right. Our main number, which is 24/7 for the sheriff's office, is 564-3800. Or you can also call, obviously you can call 911 and that gets you to the emergency dispatch.
Sure.
Or you can call the non-emergency number if you want to call dispatch and say it's non-emergency. Then you can still contact them and they can dispatch it to us, either one. We have someone at our main phone 24 hours a day, as does the dispatch center in Harrison.
Just to repeat, that would be 564-3800.
That's correct. They can put you to the dispatcher, or they can take notes and get it to an investigator, a deputy, whatever you might need. We can get that information any time of day.
What if a citizen sees a crime taking place before their eyes?
Call 911.
You would advise them not to try to confront the perpetrator directly?
As a general rule, we say to try to avoid that, especially if there's weapons involved.
Right.
We don't want someone else to become a victim in trying to save another victim.
Sure.
But depending on the circumstances, if it's something they feel they can safely either intervene or disrupt in some way, that's their own call to make. But usually, if it's potential for some violence, we don't want to get anybody in a position
just
of danger.
Call
911 with specific detailed information. The more the better. License plate, type of vehicle, color shirt, shoes, location, all the specifics. The more specific, the better. It helps us a lot.
By the way, for those who may be just tuning in, our guest today is Sheriff Brian Hutchison, Sheriff of Rockingham County and the City of Harrisonburg and other municipalities within the county. And we're just talking about law enforcement and the challenges and the rewards that go with that. We've talked about challenges. We haven't talked about rewards very much yet. What keeps you in this job?
Just love of the job itself. That is a reward. It really is.
Is it just your role in helping keep people safe? That has to be a reward.
It is a reward. And I think most any police officer would tell you it's the little things that mean so much. This morning, for instance, I went and read to the pre-K at Folks Run Elementary School.
Yes.
And something that's, you know, pretty small thing in the big picture, not really the focus of what we do, but seeing the little group, a group of young little kids like that and reading a book to them, it really warms your heart. So being able to help someone on a small situation or help out the kids, read a book to a kid, those little things are really, I think, what a lot of people are in it for.
And that maybe goes back to something we talked about earlier. What drew you to law enforcement? It may be that somebody came to your class one day.
It's very possible. It is. And I think when you're younger, a lot of that is, you know, the cars and all the other stuff that goes with it. But as I guess as I get older, I appreciate the little things even more, like reading to a group of kids or going to the county fair and handing out keychains and frisbees and things like that. It really shows you, hey, we're in this. We're trying to do the best we can to make our community safe, and here's a great reason why.
Well, and it really goes back to something we talked about in the introduction, and that is the growing tension sometimes between a community and law enforcement. We of course remember Ferguson and the blow up that happened there. So, what would you say are the factors that lead to this distrust, maybe, of law enforcement? And you've mentioned some of the things that you're doing to try to build bridges to the community. I wonder if you could just expand on that.
Yeah, I can, and I think it's society has changed. And I know I can't really claim myself to be old school. I know certainly you've been around longer than I and can claim to be old school in a much greater way than I. But if you just think, for me personally, look, using schools as the example, how dramatically times have changed since when I was in high school. Well, for one, when I went to high school, there was corporal punishment. The principal teacher could hit you with a paddle, which is entirely unheard of now.
If it wasn't fear of the Lord, it was a fear of the paddle.
It was a fear of the paddle, and both of them worked just fine.
Yeah, right.
A little fear of both never hurt anyone.
Right.
But now, in today's society, that would be unheard of.
It would be abuse.
It would absolutely. It's unpermissible. There was also, in my high school, we had a designated smoking area where you could go smoke, chew tobacco, whatever it was. If you were 16, you went out there in between classes. That would be unheard of today, entirely unheard of. And then likewise, we could, the folks that hunted, they could have their shotgun or their rifle in their truck or their car and go hunting after school, which again, in today's society, no way. It's not even fathomable to think. And it really wasn't that long ago. And I really think that speaks how much actual change has taken place within our society, just using the school system alone as an example of that. And what we see sometimes in with our school resource officer program is it has changed also in the sense that when I went, and I'm sure when you went to school, it was if the principal said you misbehaved, you misbehaved.
Yes.
If the teacher said you didn't do a good job on whatever that classwork was, you didn't do a good job on it.
And your parents soon found out about it.
And they found about it, and they took care of it. You get in trouble twice in the same day.
Exactly right.
But now what we see has come 180 degrees to the other side. It's, well, the principal didn't understand little Johnny, and the teacher didn't administer the test fairly. It's always placing blame outside versus inside. It's in sports, it's the coach's fault for not playing my son. It's the referee's fault that we lost the game. And for us in law enforcement, it's the cop's fault that I got a ticket.
Yes.
It's always, you know, instead of placing the blame, well, hey, that's my fault, it's let's point the finger out and point it elsewhere. I think it's a part of it.
You know, just a small thing, but when I get pulled over for speeding, now it doesn't happen very often.
Good.
But when I get pulled over for speeding, if I was speeding, of course I never am, but if he says I was, I just have to thank that man for taking care of policing our streets.
Right.
And if he sees me or anybody driving irresponsibly, I think we really have to express appreciation. He's on the job. And it's an important job, and we need to express our appreciation for that.
And that's
hard to do sometimes.
And that's a rare approach anymore, whereas, again, you used to see that some back when I started in law enforcement. But nowadays, it's more of, I guess, the whole mindset, societal mindset, is to question authority.
Yes.
What'd you stop me for? It's not my fault. It's your fault.
Yeah.
And no personal responsibility is lacking.
You talked about the lawn parties and the barbecues, the neighborhood barbecues. Sheriff, I've been reading a book called More God, less crime. And it makes the point that we've made several times here. And I'm going to quote from that book at the very introduction. It's written by Byron Johnson, for those who might be interested in reading it. I quote this. Here's what he says. Faith-motivated individuals, faith-based organizations, and the power of faith itself are proven keys in reducing crime and the effectiveness of our criminal justice system. And there again, I think the Valley is exceptional for the way that it connects faith to issues in our community. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, so let me go back to something else that we've talked about here. What do you think are some of the common misperceptions that people have about law enforcement?
I would think that the most, it seems as though to me, one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest, is that it's us versus them, especially with the youth of today.
That you're the enemy.
It's the mindset of it's us versus them. Yeah. And exactly, as you say, that we're the enemy, somehow we're out to get them.
Yeah.
And where we really encounter that here locally is in dealing with JMU. And so that's just that mindset of, well, we're the cops and they're the students and we have this.
They don't like us.
Right. And it's not that at all. We are, it's us for them. Yes. It's not us against them. Yes. It really, truly is.
Yes.
And so each fall, and then we'll generally do it in the spring too, at least a couple of times a year, we will go with the City of Harrisonburg's Police Department as well as the JMU Police Department, and we hand out brochures.
Yes.
We hand out little informational flyers, and we go around door to door throughout the college housing and let them know, hey, we're not, our goal is not to arrest college students for partying. We know they're going to have some fun, and that's what it's all about, I guess, being young and some of that stuff we expect. But we don't want them to become victims of crime.
Right.
That's the theme that we really emphasize. So when you see us driving through your apartment complex, we're not looking for a way to get you in trouble. We want to make sure you're safe. You're not going to be a victim of a crime. A lot of times in today's day and age, you have people that prey on college students for theft, for sexual assaults, and for drug activity.
Yes.
And we don't want them to become involved in that, and it's really us for them is the message that we try to dispel the misconception with.
It reminds me of a great revival that took place in Wales years ago. They had a great revival, and crime disappeared. What did the police department do? They formed male quartets and went into churches to sing. Wouldn't you like to be out of a job?
If I had to sing, I would be out of a job.
Well, okay, we have to end here, but thank you so much for being with us. I just want to make this point. I think it's easy for all of us to take law enforcement for granted. We feel entitled to police protection without having to get involved ourselves. I love a quote from George Orwell that brings it into focus. We sleep safe in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm. And so I just want to take this opportunity. Our guest has been Sheriff Brian Hutchison. Just to thank you and your colleagues in Bridgewater, Broadway, Dayton, Elkton, Grattos, Mount Crawford, Timberville, all over. Over 125,000 of us, by the way, in your jurisdiction. I didn't know the number was that high. We talked about it earlier. We live in the Valley under the umbrella of your protection. I want to thank you for your service to our communities. Well, that ends our program with our guest, Sheriff Brian Hutchison. If you would like to listen to the program again or share it with your friends, go to our website, valleyfamilyforum.org. Click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. So, we also want to thank so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you've appreciated the program, would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dean Welty with our guest, Sheriff Brian Hutchison, and engineer Robbie Meadows. And I invite you to join us again next week at the Crossroads where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.